KEXP thanks contributing donors and the Real Networks Foundation for supporting Mind Over Matters.
This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. My guests this morning are Laura Musikansky and John DeGraff, co-coordinators of the Seattle Area Happiness Initiative. Laura serves as Executive Director of Sustainable Seattle, and John is a documentary filmmaker, a Sustainable Seattle board member, and the Executive Director of Take Back Your Time. Laura Musikansky and John DeGraff are here today to tell us about the Seattle Area Happiness Initiative and how it can contribute to a more sustainable future. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Why do we need a Seattle Area Happiness Initiative? What is the purpose or goal?
The purpose of Seattle Area Happiness Initiative is to help bring about a better future. So when we're talking about sustainability and we're talking about happiness and we're talking about love and compassion, we're really talking about how are we doing today and how are we going to be doing in the future, not just for ourselves, but our grandchildren and our grandchildren's children.
And we do that really by trying to ask a lot of questions of people about how they are doing today in a whole series of areas so that we're looking at a lot more than just how much income they have and things, but really the whole quality of their lives. And if we can get a good picture of that today, then we can see where we're hurting and where we need to go.
Would you like to go into more detail now about what you propose to do for the initiative?
I'll talk about the survey, John, and then I'll talk about the objective indicators.
Sure. What we've done, we've put online now a survey with about 135 questions. It takes about 30 minutes to complete, so it's very comprehensive. When you take it, you get a score immediately when you're finished in 9 key areas of life. And these are things like psychological well-being, physical health, education, arts and culture, social connection, community participation, environmental quality, your feelings about the government, and also your sense of material well-being. So you get a wide picture of how you're doing. So far, 3,000 people just about have taken the survey completely through in the week since we launched this. And so the survey will tell us a lot, and it can be used in the long run. We'll also have a scientific sampling. We're looking for the funding right now to be able to survey Seattle in a very scientific and demographic way, and then that data will be provided and available to policymakers, to organizations, and to individuals to begin to change our lives for the better.
And there's another part to this project, and where this is coming from is from Bhutan. So Bhutan was the first country that did this, and they have been doing this for 40 years. And one of the reasons this is exciting is that it's been tried and it's true. They are making progress. So they do the survey, and they get the temperature of how people are doing, and then they complement that to get the whole picture with objective indicators or objective metrics. So we're developing the objective metrics that will show the whole picture of how we're doing as a region. Once we have that whole picture, and we'll need that scientific survey results to be able to show that to policymakers and to organizations that make program decisions and policy decisions, once we have that whole picture, then we'll issue a report that says, okay, given that the survey results are, this is the way people feel that they're doing in our region. And then given the objective indicators, this is sort of a touching stone of how are we doing in terms of measurements like greenhouse gas emissions versus, say, for instance, a survey result that will ask you a question like, do you feel safe in your environment? Do you feel like your water quality is good, your air quality is good, et cetera? So we'll issue that report. And that report is really aimed at individuals to be able to help them make decisions and take action and come together to take that action, to organizations, for organizations to be able to make some decisions about where they want to take, and then policymakers. So part of that is gathering our partners, and John can talk a little bit about the partners for the project.
So in each of the domains, whether it be mental health or physical health or so forth, we are looking for partnering organizations that are actually working in these fields. So we'd be talking to hospitals, for instance, in the field of health, or counseling centers in the field of mental health, or universities in the field of education, maybe labor unions when it comes to work-life time balance and things of that sort. We want to bring numbers of these organizations, and we're already beginning to partner with a number of those organizations, into the mix so that they are advisors to this. They also will receive a code number, which they can give to their members, their staff, their clients, whoever they encourage to take the survey, to put in at the end of the survey, and then they will be provided with overall results, not individual data, because we want to make sure that privacy is maintained, but overall results. How can that be used? Well, let me give you one good example, which is the way it's used in Brazil, And this is a company called Natura. It's a rainforest company that actually produces natural cosmetics to protect the rainforest. They have about 8,000 employees in their Sao Paulo plant, and they surveyed their employees, found that the lowest score for their employees, a score of 30 out of 100, was in time balance. Workers were stressed. They were overworked. So the company got together with workers and talked about some of the things that could be done about that. More part-time work with benefits, more flexibility, more opportunities to work at home, a little more vacation time, and working together also with the city to deal with their commute time, which is a killer for them. That's the kind of thing that we would like to see all kinds of organizations do, and then, of course, the city to work on policy.
So I spoke earlier about Bhutan. So Bhutan has been doing this. They do the survey, and then they have the objective indicators, and they use those results to make policy decisions and then to allocate resources. And now we're starting to see many other countries start to look at this as a way of how can they broaden their scope instead of just focusing on the economy, which is important. The economy is a big part of this project. We're not saying that the economy should not be our focus. We're saying that we can focus on other things, but to focus on not just the economy, but other aspects for taking ourselves as organizations, as individuals, as in a country going forward into real progress. So we call this the Seattle Area Happiness Initiative. And the key part of that is this is the Happiness Initiative. This is a project that can be taken on in any city. And that's a big part of our goal, is that this is something that will be duplicated in other cities. We're putting together the tools and the resources so that other cities can do this. And we're taking the hard knocks so that other cities can do it more easily.
And we're calling that the Gross National Happiness Index, so that we have a wider kind of a national or even international name that can be used. And we're just the Seattle version of that. But we're already getting a lot of interest in other cities. I just spoke, for instance, over the weekend in a town of 10,000 people called Decorah, Iowa, small town in Iowa. I did two talks on the Happiness Initiative, got great turnouts. In one case was at a coffee house and people were spilling out the door and it was below zero at 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning. So that kind of shows to me the interest in this. That town wants to go forward and do the same thing. The library, for example, is going to do a happiness month and have books and things about this. So we hope to do that kind of thing here. We also have some interest down in San Jose, California. We even were contacted by a city councilor from Guadalajara, Mexico. We think this is going to spread because it's an idea that does seem to excite people.
So when you go to the survey, if you go to the sustainableseattle.org website, you'll see the survey is there and you'll see that it says Seattle Area Happiness Initiative. Now, this survey is available to anybody. So we ask that you put your zip code in so that we can get the results for the Seattle area. But that was one of our goals, is that this is something that any city can do. And the survey itself, anybody in the world, anywhere who has internet access, and that is a limiting factor and a piece around social justice that we want to address in the future when we have funding. But it is available to anybody, the survey is.
Right now it's just in English, but we have a Spanish translation underway and certainly hope to have this translated into many other languages.
And then I'll say one other thing about the project, which is that this is a team effort, as it would probably be in other cities. When John and I say we, it's, you know, we're just two of about 20 who are working on this project, and it really is a collaborative team effort. And to that, we're a volunteer organization and there's lots of opportunity.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Laura Musikansky and John DeGraff, co-coordinators of the Seattle Area Happiness Initiative. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. What kind of response are you getting within the Seattle area to your initiative?
Well, we've certainly had a lot of people take the survey. There was a great story about us on King Television, 4 minutes on the nightly news, which is, it's almost unheard of to have a 4-minute story on the nightly news. So we were thrilled by that. It got a great response. King did a beautiful job with the story. There was also a wonderful column by Nicole Broder in last Friday's Seattle Times that attracted a lot of attention. One of the funny things, of course, is that you get these comments and there are sadly a lot of very irate people out there who kind of get angry about everything and such. And so I kind of don't think too much about all these sort of comments, but I do think about the fact that so many people are taking this survey and people are telling us and writing to us and saying they're excited by this. If you want to get involved as a volunteer, just send an email to happy@sustainableseattle.org. That's the place we have for volunteers. But I think we're very excited by the response, and we're hearing from, for instance, a local minister here immediately blogged the whole thing on the Huffington Post when the King TV story came out.
I mean, we are getting really positive feedback, but I will say there's three kinds of comments that I see coming that we need to pay attention to. One is people who take the survey and get quote-unquote low scores, and then we'll get an email saying, your survey tells me I'm really unhappy. Now what? And I think that, you know, this is called the Happiness Initiative, but it's a word. And when we say happiness, we don't mean a feeling. We mean a state of being in terms of sustainability, in terms of love and compassion. And how are we going to have that future that we really all want to have and that present that we want to have, where we're thriving on many counts? So we're gathering resources so that people who take the survey and want to be able to take action will have access to that and would love to have help, particularly from professionals, to help gather those resources. But at the same time, if you take the survey and find that you're quote unquote unhappy in a place, I think one way to interpret that is that that's something where it's showing where you really care. It's helping you to see that you really are a caring person on many levels and that there's a lot that you can do yourself, even in your own life, to help us progress towards a sustainable future. Because in the end, it's all just individuals, right? A country is people. A company is people. I mean, we are people, even though sometimes we feel like, you know, we're just workers or automatons. So there's that. On the other side, we get feedback saying things like, what is this happiness stuff? You know, what about, it's really the economy. And the data shows that if people have more money, that they are happier. And that's absolutely true. You need to have enough money to be able to meet your basic needs and then a little bit more. We're not arguing against that at all. We're just saying that there's other pieces to life as well. And then the third comment that we'll often get will be, what are you doing? You're telling me, the government is telling me that this is the way I'm going to be living my life. And now the government is going to, you know, have all these different extra constraints on me. And I find that to be a really interesting statement because the government already has so much to do in our lives. And don't we want to have more input? Don't we all want to have more input in the way that the government impacts us? The government is under just as many economic constraints as you and I are in our daily lives with the economy. And so wouldn't it be nice if we had a way of helping ourselves as well as the government make decisions about how they're going to be allocating their resources so that they impact all of us now and in the future in a at least gentler and maybe in a more positive way?
I think the whole point is, if you're making money, fine, but if you're making money at the same time that you're sacrificing your life in all these other domains, if you're risking your health, if you're destroying the time you spend with your family, if you don't have time to be part of the community, and all of these things you pay a cost for. So what we're saying is, let's really look at the big picture. And I think this survey allows us to do that in a very, very important way. And it really will tell public officials where we're actually hurting, because sometimes they're not sure. They only look at the economic numbers. They look at this thing called the gross domestic product. The gross domestic product we have an obsession with. We publish it every quarter. But it doesn't tell us all that much in real terms. It tells us how many dollars are being spent in the economy. If we have an oil spill and it takes a lot of work to clean that up and a lot of legal bills and such, the gross national product goes up more than it would if the oil got safely to the refinery. If you have a divorce and you have to move into two households and you have legal bills, the GDP goes up. If you get cancer and you have expensive medical bills, the GDP goes up. But if you volunteer in your community without money, if you take care of your kids yourself, if you exercise without going to an expensive health club, if you do all of these kinds of things, if you garden, if you share time with others, none of that counts. That's all a waste of time as far as GDP is concerned. This new survey and this methodology that we are using counts at all.
So that begs the question, well, what about the Genuine Progress Indicator? Or what about, you know, Sustainable Seattle? What about your other indicators that you've been developing over the last 20 years? And we're not saying that those aren't important efforts and that we don't want to help further those efforts in any way that we can and don't, in fact, build on those efforts. Those are important efforts. What this project is it's taking what has worked in another country and is working in other companies and countries and taking that approach so that we can further those same goals. So if you look at, for instance, the Genuine Progress Indicator, which I think is a really good way of sort of looking at, well, what's the difference between the nine domains of happiness and how you're measuring those and the Genuine Progress Indicator, you'll see that it's essentially a very similar kinds of calculation. I think that the reason that this project is sort of sexy and is something that is very exciting to me because I see it as something that really can change the world is that it's simple and it's approachable. And it can be, once we've, you know, done some of the legwork, it can be replicable. Other cities can take it on. And if you do that survey, you'll see how it is something that you can reach into. You can sort of get some of your own teeth into it and then get involved in the project if you want to help spread it in the city.
And we're not just looking here in this case at these facts, although the facts are absolutely important, the objective indicators. We're doing that too, but we're also giving people the chance to say how they feel about things. Nicole Broder wrote about that in the Seattle Times. She said, you know, we find out about, you know, how much we're polluting and how much gas we're using and this, but no one ever asks us how we feel about our lives. This survey actually does that, and that also partially makes it unique.
Would you go into a little bit more detail about the content of the 9 different areas that you're measuring and how they relate to happiness and to sustainability?
Well, let me start with one because it's been a passion of mine for a long time. And this is this whole question of time balance, work-life balance. It's one of the 9 domains. The Bhutanese have felt it very important. And as we see the surveys being done around the world, it's interesting how often this is one of the lowest scores for people. It was the lowest score in Brazil in a company. It's been the lowest score in neighborhoods and communities in Brazil. It was the lowest score in 2 Canadian cities, Victoria, BC, which took the lead in this and where we, in truth, got the idea from. The lowest score in Victoria was in time balance, and Victoria's a fairly prosperous city. It was also the lowest score in Glace Bay, Nova Scotia, which is a very poor Canadian community. We're seeing it so far in the early returns. I'm going to look at this like an election or something like that. In the early returns on our survey of 3,000 votes cast so far, time balance is ranking 2nd to the lowest. Actually, the lowest score so far is in community participation, and that kind of surprised us. But what that says is, you know, people feel like their life is stressed, it's pressured. They're telling us they don't have enough time to be involved in their community. They can't take care of their health. They're feeling stressed from many directions. And this contributes to a lot of other factors. The fact that we Americans are so unhealthy in comparison to other people. The fact that we're not connecting socially. So that recently AARP and Time Magazine just issued the results of a study showing that the incidence of chronic loneliness among Americans age 45 and over has jumped from 20 to 35% just in the last 10 years alone. And that's very, very significant because that not only affects how those people feel about themselves, but that causes enormous health problems and costs to our society in other ways. So time balance is one, but we're looking at so many others, you know, education and health, and we're getting these self-reported scores, and then we also match those with the objective indicators to try to get a more whole picture of how we're doing as a city and how we're doing as a country.
So John mentioned time balance. The other 8 domains, and there's the material well-being. So an example of a question there would be not just where does your income level compare to your neighbors, but also how secure do you feel about your income? And then there's the environment, which will ask questions such as, I mentioned earlier, do you feel like your environment is safe, air quality, water quality, et cetera, climate? And then community. So questions about community. There's questions there about inclusivity and do you ever feel like you're being excluded or that you're subject to bias and prejudice? And we have gotten comments there that included in that need to be your sexuality. So there are some gaps. We recognize that. And then about culture and how engaged or active are you in activities like around the theater and the arts and sports? And then education. As John mentioned, do you feel like you are learning? Do you feel like you have access to the education that you want? For your physical well-being, part of that survey will go to your mood today, but another part of it is like, so how often are you really feeling stressed? How often are you feeling happy, et cetera? And then your physical health. So questions about, you know, are you, I would call it alter-abled instead of disabled, but I think it says disabled on the survey, that kind of thing. And then the last, the 8th, would be good governance. And this, I think, would be very interesting for those in agencies to find. The questions will be things like, how much do you trust your federal government, your state government, your local government? It'll be interesting once we have enough survey results and we get the scientific survey to see demographically what the difference there is between the XY generation and those of us who are a few more years under the belt.
And we don't yet know how scientific these results are, although as we get large, large numbers of results like this, you start getting results that will be fairly similar to what you get when you're actually doing a scientifically demographic sample. But one thing we are finding is that there is a pattern that we're not doing quite as well as our neighbors in Victoria in most every area, and actually time balance is the one place we're doing about the same as people in Victoria, but we're lower in community participation. People don't trust the government here as much as they do in Canada, things of that sort.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Laura Musikansky and John DeGraff, co-coordinators of the Seattle Area Happiness Initiative. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. How did the initiative get started in the first place?
In November of 2009, because of the work I've done on the issue of time pressure and the Take Back Your Time organization, I was invited to Brazil to the 5th International Gross National Happiness Conference to speak on a panel with a local person, Vicky Robin, here, and a fellow from Japan on the domain of time balance. And in the course, I met people from Bhutan. I found out the things that were being done. I found out the exciting things going on in Brazil, in cities, in universities, school kids going door to door and surveying people in the neighborhood using these kinds of surveys. Brazil, it's just fascinating what's happening in Brazil. But I also found out about Victoria, British Columbia, and how they were doing this survey and engaging their community through that. And I got excited about that and came back and talked to our city council president, Richard Conlon, and said, we should do what Victoria's doing. And the council brought Mike Pennock, the leader of the project in Victoria, down to address the council, talk about what Victoria was doing. I think that they started getting very interested. We also brought the commissioner of happiness from Bhutan here in June. He spoke at the Green Festival. But this project really took off, I have to say, when Laura and Sustainable Seattle got involved, which was right after Labor Day and after I'd given a talk to Sustainable Seattle. And before, we'd been plodding along, I think, although we were making some progress, but we were plodding. But Sustainable Seattle and Laura, both with her vision and the organization with its staff and its volunteers, just has taken this to a new level, it's gotten the survey up, gotten the word out to people, brought volunteers in. It's very, very exciting. This couldn't have been done without what Sustainable Seattle has contributed, and it's just an exciting project.
So Sustainable Seattle is the first organization to create regional sustainability indicators. And back in the 90s, we really did change the world. That process that was created by some of our founders include Richard Conlon, who's the president of the Seattle City Council, Alan Atkinson, who was the executive director of the United Nations Earth Charter and now has an international consultancy, Vicky Robin, who does conversation cafes, and many others. After the first initial six, it kind of quickly expanded out to very many other co-founders of Sustainable Seattle. They created a set of indicators based on grassroots activism, going out into this community and saying, how do you define sustainability? More importantly, how do you measure that? Because that's really how you define something, right? Is how you measure it, because that's where you're going to make some decisions. And that process was replicated across the globe. And when you look at sustainability indicators, and you know now there's all kinds of work around sustainability, Sustainable Seattle really put Seattle on the map for sustainability and really helped that whole sustainability movement really just take hold and take fire. And then in the beginning of this century, we started doing very specific neighborhood work, and we invested heavily in what I think is the ultimate set of grassroots sustainability indicators. It's called Be Sustainable, and it's just the letter b-sustainable.org. And there you'll see that we have four different domains based on the work of Daniela Meadows, 24 different goals that were identified by our region, and 184 different indicators. So imagine that you've come in as a volunteer, as executive director of a sustainability organization to say, okay, now how are you going to keep all of these indicators fresh on a volunteer basis? These things are incredibly complex. They show the interlinked nature of sustainability. And for a sustainability buff, I mean, check it out. It's pretty amazing how it shows that interlinked nature. Unfortunately, you have to join and then you can log in and get full access, but you'll see how the indicators show the interlinked nature with upstream or leading and lagging or downstream indicators. That said, it's very complex and it's not very approachable for somebody who isn't a sustainability complete buff. So here we are, once again, 100% volunteer organization saying, we changed the world. This is an example of how complex this field has gotten, and it really is meaningful, but you've really got to be knowledgeable to get there. Now, how do we do it again? And so John comes in and says, hey, they're doing this really cool thing in Bhutan and let's do this survey. And it's like, we've got all this really good energy around this. And we at Sustainable Seattle thought, this is really interesting. How can we work with John to take this to the next level so that we can do something in this country, learning from what Bhutan has done for 40 years and take that to the next level in our country? And that's our goal.
So you've been alluding to this, but just very briefly, what are your next steps?
Well, one of the things that we need to do is raise funds. I mean, You know, it's the old bane of every kind of thing, but we're poor as church mice, and we have got to turn that around and get some support to build the structure for this. If we do, if we're able to do that, and I think if people see the value of this, then I see no reason why this cannot spread very quickly to cities all over the United States, why we can't have a national indicator, a benchmark that uses the survey nationwide, and that people have ways to compare themselves with, and that we then start trading best practices among cities and communities to improve all of our scores and to have a happier, healthier, and sustainable life for all of us.
So what we would really love is somebody to fund this who really wants to be involved in the project and see the kind of change that we can do. And then we have a team that is putting together the objective indicators, and we have a team that's putting together some examples of policies and practices. So to that, our next meeting is February 8th from 4 to 6. It's up on the website. People are welcome to come if they want to get involved in the project and help to make this happen.
We're excited about this. We really are getting great feedback from people. We're seeing the volunteers come in, and we just need the resources. And I think this is ready to take off. I even had a conversation with Housing and Urban Development in Washington, D.C., in which they told me that if they see that this can work in Seattle, that it's possible that they'll support a multi-city project to take this around the country.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Booyah! The future is ours, and it's up to us.
I can't add to that.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
You have just been listening to Laura Musikansky and John DeGraff, co-coordinators of the Seattle Area Happiness Initiative. For more information, check on the web at www.sustainableseattle.org. Again, that's sustainableseattle.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, selected sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on podcasting, and scroll down to Mind Over Matters sustainability segment. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and kexp.org.